God can be worshipped and realized at three levels. Energy, diversity, and personality. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Energy, diversity, personality. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Right? Same. God can assume any form at any time or can inject himself into any form. So it's explained in Vedic understanding, in yoga philosophy, that God can appear in a form of a painting, stone, marble, wood, metal, gold, anything. It's not that marble's not marble. It is marble. But God, if he chooses, can inhabit the form or that material with his energy. Would that be too difficult for God to do? If it's God, shouldn't be. Okay. So the concept of the statues is called the deity. In Sanskrit, Murti. M-U-R-T-I. So God can inhabit the statue. Why would God want to inhabit a statue with his energy? I mean, in the Catholic Church, we have, for example, the crucifix, which is the prominent feature, always. Why isn't God rising from the dead the prominent feature? Why is it him being killed off? I've always wondered that. Then you have iconography of the saints' statues, right? Because you can meditate on them, can't you? You can have the iconography of the relief or statues of the Stations of the Cross. Same idea. You can meditate on them. So this is the same idea. But you can. This goes a step further and says that if a deity is, such as these, is properly installed with mantras, prayers, rituals, and certain kinds of paraphernalia and substances like ghee and cloth and turmeric and, you know, different things that they would use, objects of different substances. Then God will come into that form whereby you can worship God. Why? If you give service to God in some way, then it is like serving him directly. Because you cannot see him directly, you can serve the image. Do you have to have an image? No. Could you serve the idea or meditate on the idea? Sure. Can you serve the concept? Sure. Can you serve the energy? Sure. But this locks it in more easily and visually. You know, being raised Catholic, I go into a Catholic church and I always liked all the iconography. Then on occasion I'd go into a Protestant church or Lutheran church. They didn't have any of that stuff. You know, they didn't have any, didn't even have an altar. So I always felt more the sense of God and the presence of God, I'm just saying me, in a Catholic church than I would in a Protestant church. Because I had more reminders that triggered my devotion. So by the same token, this works the same way. These statues of of Lakshmi and Vishnu are not installed by virtue of a big ritual, and they won't be. Because once they are, then you have to perform a certain level of service daily. And it's very strict. The rules are strict. So unless you're willing to do that, you don't install them. That's what temples are for. Because they do that sort of thing on a regular basis. Can you do that in your home? Sure. But most of us wouldn't have the time, patience, or commitment to do it. There's too many things involved. And Vishnu is God. We talked about Vishnu last time. Vishnu is a name for God that means what? He who lives everywhere. All pervasive. That's what it means. So anybody's definition of God, whether it's Yahweh or Allah or whoever it is God who lives everywhere. And his consort is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi or Shri. As we mentioned numerous times, in Vedic understanding, there's no such thing as God without the goddess. Doesn't happen. In the predominant religions of our time in the last 5,000 years, you have Christianity, or shall I say biblical religions. You have Christianity and Judaism and Islam. And none of whom really recognize the goddess. They recognize divinity in Mary. In the Torah and the ancient Jewish tradition, the female aspect, the divine feminine, was called the abomination. So she wasn't really high on the list of something to worship. And Islam, well, they have a bit of a problem with the feminine. So, in Buddhism, Hinduism, and in Vedanta, what we're talking about here, we are not adhering to any religion in our discussion of Eastern philosophy. This is not Hinduism. We are talking about Vedanta, and we are talking about Sanatan Dharma, the eternal Dharma, eternal religion, which is service. Service to God. It's nothing to do with any religion. So, and any those religions always recognize the divine feminine, or those concepts recognize the divine feminine. You will never find Vishnu without Lakshmi, or you will never find Lakshmi without Vishnu. Not that they can't go by themselves here and there. They can, but they're together. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. So any of you who are having trouble with money, or struggle with money, or struggle with having money, thinking that money might not be a very good thing, sometimes people, they sort of semi-quote Shakespeare and say, money is the root of all evil. Which is actually not the quote. The quote is, love of money is the root of all evil. God's wife is the wealthiest woman there is. And the interesting story about Lakshmi is that one of the names for Lakshmi is Chanchala. Flickering, unsteady. So, if you are blessed with wealth karmically in one lifetime, you may not be blessed with wealth in the next lifetime. She doesn't like to hang out with any particular human for very long, because she gets bored. If there's more to it than that, if there's some devotion, then she'll respond better. The reason Lakshmi chose Vishnu as her husband, and she did. There's a story that goes with that, which we're not going to tell right now. Because he was the most detached. We're going to talk about that in a moment. You know, he could sort of, yeah, he could take her or leave her, you know, whatever. So, the goddess of fortune resides with God. And who's the wealthiest person in the universe? Theoretically, God. He's also the wealthiest person outside of the universe. So, Lakshmi, that name, there are different local dialects of pronunciation for Lakshmi. And I've told the story before, and in parts of India she is called Loki. Loki. From which we get the word lucky. So if you have Lakshmi, you are lucky. You are fortunate. Wealth and good fortune is part of God's reality. There's no negative involved. The negative comes with attachment. A man who is attached to his wealth may not be able to enter heaven because his focus is on materialism. A wealthy man who is devoted to God and good service or charity and benevolence using his wealth, who is not attached to his wealth, but is more attached to God and service of God and humanity, will certainly be able to enter heaven. So we should understand that wealth is energy. It's neither positive nor negative. It's all in how you use it. So the goddess of fortune is God's girl, according to Vedic understanding. And we're going to talk a little bit about Vishnu, which we already are. Tonight we are going to present you with a mantra of Vishnu, one we have never done, not here officially. Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. Vishnu is presented there, and typically, he's always presented in a four-armed form. You've seen many of these paintings and pictures from India with many heads and many arms and all that great stuff. Why? Well, humans got two, the gods may as well have four. I mean, you can get twice as much done to begin with if you got extra arms. It is many of the gods, demigods, and sort of angelic beings are often depicted with several arms. Two, four, sometimes six, sometimes eight. It's a lot. Vishnu always holds the same objects in his hands. They are Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. Shankha is the conch, you'll see that in his upper left hand. Conch is also considered, according to Vedic understanding, it's a bone substance. Bone substance is considered to be impure, not the conch. The conch is pure. It's regarded as pure. Vishnu holds the conch. Before they began the battle at Kurukshetra, which is in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna and Arjuna, they all blew their conches. This is like their sort of battle cry, not cry, but like the trumpet, right? But they blow the conch. And it struck fear into the hearts of the demons or of the opponents. You blow the conch, not me, Vishnu. It inspires the devotees, the followers of Vishnu, the saintly persons, the good souls. And it strikes terror in the hearts of the evildoers, the miscreants, and the rogues. That's the concept. So, this is about fear or fearlessness. That's the conch. That's what he uses it for. Then, on his right hand is the chakra, the Vishnu chakra, called Sudarshan. And that's a disc. And it spins on his finger. That's really the weapon. And why would God have a weapon? Because it's understood that God is light trying to overcome darkness, good trying to overcome evil. And in through the Vedas you can read all kinds of accounts of God fighting different kinds of demons and battles. The only difference between, say, you and I fight a negative person or a negative force and kill them, they then go and experience their karma, their negative karma that they have accumulated due to negative deeds throughout the lifetime. If God kills somebody directly, they become a liberated soul. There's no negative result to it. Their soul is freed from the wheel of repeated birth and death, samsara. So it's not a bad thing to be killed by God in that sense. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is decline in religious practice or virtue or dharma, at that time I come myself to protect the theists, the devotees, the believers, the followers, and to annihilate the demons, dark forces, miscreants. I take birth or I appear. So sometimes God has to come himself. That's the concept there. So the chakra is a weapon. Cuts heads off. Interesting things. The club in the lower right hand is not general. It's a weapon in and of itself, but it's to sort of symbolically conk you over the head and break your illusion. In this material world, we are all under the influence of Maya. And Maya is illusion. The spiritual energy, which is eternity, bliss, and knowledge, is considered to be the internal potency or internal energy of the Godhead. The external energy, the Maya, is the illusory energy, the illusion that we are all caught up in here in the material world, in the created world, in the universe. Thinking that we are bodies, not souls. Thinking that our meager little insignificant existence is the be-all and end-all. Thinking that each one of us is the actual center of the universe. In various levels of self-importance driven by the desires of the ego. So that's the external energy, Maya, or sometimes it's called Mahamaya, the great Maya, great illusion. And who's in charge of that mind? Well, it's God's energy. There are different beliefs about it, but generally the Vedic understanding is the following. You always have free will. God will never force you to do anything that you don't want to do, ever. Because that's not God. God is love. Always. Love, understanding, compassion, mercy. Patience. Endless patience. But God, this is the 332nd time I screwed up. It's okay. It's all right. It doesn't matter. so in the spiritual world, we live with God. But God is the center of everything. God is the focal point, and we are there to serve. And service to God brings joy and fulfillment. And it also allows you to realize your life purpose and your nature in the spiritual world. Then you wake up one day and you go, yeah, why are we serving this guy? You know, why don't we serve me? You know, I'd like to get all this kind of attention and service that he's getting. What does God say? No problem. Let me orchestrate that for you. I have a place. I've created it special. It's down there. The material creation is considered, according to the Vedic understanding, to be 1/4 of the creation. The spiritual world is 3/4 of the creation. God says, not a problem, here you go. I'm going to give you your little ego to run around with. Then I'm going to give you a special body. There are only 8,400,000 species of life in the universe. I'm going to put you through them all just to make sure you've tested them out. And you find one you like. 400,000 of them are human. Have you seen 400,000 human species on Earth? On telly? No. Which tells us that there is life on other planets. And there is. So, we can come down here. Now we're in charge. Now you're running the show. You're the main guy. You're going to have to convince all these other people that you're the main guy. That'll take some doing. But at least you know you're the main guy, and you can orchestrate service to you. There you go. And some people are better at it than others. Until we get to the point where we can't take it anymore. Not happy. This isn't working for me. It's not what I envisioned. I mean, it was great for the first 20 years. Now it's all falling apart. Or first 22,000 lifetimes. Now it's all falling apart. You know, this is a place of distress. This is a place of suffering. This is a place of old age, disease, death. Over and over and over again, death. We're reading in one of the Puranas, Vishnu Purana, the other, was it Vishnu Purana? Garuda Purana. That the fetus in the womb has complete memory of all of his or her lifetimes. And in that tight, wet space, you know, they always try to pick, oh, and the baby's so happy inside mommy's tummy where it's nice and warm. Yeah, and there's gurgling, and there's acid, and there's bad smells, and there's no room to move. And he's kicking, trying to get out. And there's the reality. So there he is, cramped up in there, and he's going, what was I thinking? How many times? I'm in another womb, for God's sake. Okay, now I see all my past life. You know what I'm going to do? As soon as I get out of here, I'm going to worship you. I'm going to focus on you the whole time. Then, at the end of my life, I'll get out of here, and then it's time. She begins to push. He comes out and squeezes his head like it's unimaginable. Out he comes. Forgot everything. Forgot it all. Well, it's new and wonderful. Everybody's fondling me. What could be better? All of it is forgotten because the Maya, as soon as you take your first breath, boom. In comes the Maya. Down comes the karma. You're locked in. There's, how did it go? They had this little boy, his sister is born, and she's in the crib. And she's very small. And he's maybe two. And he wanders into the crib one night, and the parents are at the door, you know, kind of overhearing him. And he says to her, you know, whatever her name is, Cindy, can you tell me what it was like there on the other side again? How nice it's there, how nice it is there. I'm beginning to forget. So, we're here to do what we need to do. To act like little ego maniacs, no offense. And until we are brought to our knees. Until we're ready to surrender. And go back to the place where we will be eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. And we can live happily in the spiritual realm. It doesn't end. It just goes on and on. And it's not the same. It's not static. It's dynamic. It's ever expanding. So, the club is to break the illusion. So, if you want your illusion broken, you can meditate on Vishnu coming in with the club and whacking you over the head a couple of times and breaking that illusion. Then, the fourth is the lotus, which is in his lower left hand. And lotus represents everything you think it does. Gentleness and kindness and compassion and love and understanding. And then lotus, of course, is the symbol for transcendence. Because a lotus is a very popular motif, symbol, and concept in Eastern philosophy, as I'm sure you probably know. There might be 20 words for lotus in the Sanskrit dictionary. I should actually look. There's so many words for lotus. So the lotus grows from the mud under the pond. It grows in lakes and ponds, sometimes at the side of rivers, but the water must be still. The stem comes up from the mud and out to the top, and then it puts out a little lily pad, and then it comes up a little bit higher. Up comes the bud, and then the blossom comes. So it's to be of the to be born of the earth, but transcendental to it, to remain above it. So the lotus is born from the mud and the water, but she's transcendental to it. She remains above it. She's untouched by it. So that's the concept of the lotus. Lakshmi almost carries the lotus. She has a lotus in her left hand as well. You will often see depictions of Lakshmi with her hand like this, and the gold coins are coming down. So, if you need an extra few quid, she's the one you can talk to. So that's Lakshmi and Vishnu, and we're going to do a Vishnu mantra in a few minutes. Now, last week was our first night in our new incarnation of our meditation series, our Tuesday evening meditation, and we introduced the Gayatri mantra. We had done the Gayatri before, right? So, I already know via Jenny's emails that some people have been doing the Gayatri with great exuberance, so I'm very eager to hear about that. Okay, so we are going to introduce a new mantra today. This is an old mantra in the sense that this is another very, very recognizable, standard mantra
I could say it's thousands of years old and I'd be right. And we're going to, this mantra is dedicated or connected to Vishnu, God. If you don't, you know, I know for some of you this is very different and foreign. Vishnu is God, simply. We all got heaps and heaps of negative karma, no offense. And we need to burn up, burn off, neutralize, and get rid of negative karma if we want to get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. We also have to get rid of and neutralize positive karma. Why ever for? Because any karma that you have, good or bad, you must come back to experience the result of that karma. The karma phal. Phal means fruit. And if it's good karma, you have to come back to enjoy the result of the karma. If it's bad, you come back, you suffer. Generally down here on Earth, Earth is one of the middle planetary, part of the middle planetary system. Boo, Earth is actually called Boo, B-H-U. Boo, and then there's Boova. These are middle planetary systems. The goddess of the Earth is called Bhumi. Bhumi. And here, things are very sort of measured, where you get a moderate dose of everything, pretty much. I mean, if you went to Kenya right now, or Iraq, it would be like going to hell. Hell is available here. Heavenly places are available too. But generally, it's a middle of the road kind of a place. So there are 108 beads. Different symbolism. 9 times 12, 108, yeah. There are 12 signs in the zodiac. There are 12 houses in the zodiac chart, the horoscope. There are 9 planets in Vedic understanding. There are 108 beads. Number 1 is God. 0 is creation. And 8 is eternity, infinity. This is the head bead. That's God. Head bead. The guru bead. It's the main one. You don't chant on that one. When you chant on beads, you know, I always chuckle when I explain this, because it's like, here I am telling the Catholics how to chant on beads. You know, kind of rosary. So you chant only with these two fingers, thumb and middle finger of the right hand only. Thumb and middle finger. So you chant your mantra like Om Bhurbhuvasvata Tsvidurvarenyam Bhargodevasyadini Dhyoyona Pachodaya Pobhurakspi. And if you want anything, Om Bhurbhuvasvata Tsvidur Varenyam Bhargove Devasyadini Dhyoyona Pachodaya. And then the next one. Whatever mantra you chant. Om Sri Lakshmi Anama, 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 whatever mantra. And then you go around. And then you come all the way around, and you are there. You don't cross over the headbeat. You turn the mala, this is a mala, like a garland. Turn it around, and go back the other way. One beat at a time. Come to the end of the beads, come to the head bead,
you don't cross over it, you turn around and go back the other way. Those two fingers. So you do it. Okay. Vishnu mantra. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. 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 Okay. Om. Om. Namo means respects, obeisances, bowing down. Namo is namas, say. Bhagavate, bhagavate, or bhagavate, bhagavate. Either bhagavate or bhagavate, whatever you like. Technically, it's bhagava, bhagavate. But everybody says bhagavate. That's okay. Unto one who has the bhagat, so I'll explain that in a moment. Vasudevaya. Okay. Translation. I offer my deepest respects unto Vishnu, God himself, who is kind, wealthy, and auspicious. He possesses the six qualities or opulences of the Godhead in full measure. He is divine, perfect, and complete. Vishnu is Bhagavat or Bhagavan, since he possesses the six divine qualities or opulences, or Bhagas, a Bhaga is an opulence or special quality. Vat or Van means one who has or one who possesses. He possesses the six opulences in fullest measure beyond that of any other material or spiritual being. The six divine opulences are wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and detachment. Aishvarya. So here's the verse. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasashriya jnana vairagya yoshchapi shanang bhage itingana. That's from the Vishnu Purana. So Aishvarya is wealth, virya is strength, yashas is fame, shri is beauty, jnana, pronounced jnana, is knowledge, and vairagya is detachment or renunciation. Living beings tend to praise, worship, or look upon, or look up to anyone who possesses any one of the divine opulences mentioned above. Is that true? Absolutely. Go read Hello magazine if you don't believe me. A person blessed with even one of these qualities becomes worshipable in human society.
The only person who possesses all of these qualities in fullest measure is God, by definition, according to yoga philosophy. That is why God or Vishnu is to be praised, worshipped, and loved above all others. By chanting this mantra, you will increase your love and appreciation for God, as well as expand and develop these qualities in your own life. Wealth is a powerful thing. Wealthy people have the resources and the wherewithal to do whatever they like, all kinds of things, for themselves and on behalf of others. People admire and look up to wealthy people, so much so that sometimes wealthy people are the biggest nincompoops, and still people are praising them. You know that's true. And sometimes they're wonderful people. Depends. So strength, people who are strong or powerful, or virya also means talented. Particular gifts or talents. We worship these people. Actors, musicians, singers, artists, they possess virya, a special talent. Right? Fame. Sometimes nowadays people are famous for something, famous for nothing. You know, it's famous because they're celebrities. You know. More and more you see people who don't do anything yet, they're famous. You know. So fame also, people are enamored by fame, by people who are well known and recognized. Beauty. Who do they put on the covers of magazines? I wonder. The most beautiful people. Why? Because that's a divine opulence. That is godly or God-like. Is it? Yes, it is. It is. Why don't they put the ugliest people on the magazines? Why don't they?
It's a shame they don't.
Well, they can, but you see, beauty is a manifestation of good karma.
Then what about the ugly, beautiful people like William Defoe or Antoine Cassel or any of those?
Okay, okay, let's talk about that. Willem Dafoe is a great actor.
Yeah.
He has virya. Now, you know, people may think he's a funny-looking guy, and he is a very unusual-looking guy. So maybe he doesn't get the prize for being the best-looking kid in the classroom.
He's so striking.
He is. He is, and he has an energy about him. And he's a great actor. So that's his qualification. I mean, beauty is what's praised. I don't mean to make offense to people who are ugly or unattractive. All of these opulences, if you possess them into whatever degree you possess them, are considered to be good karma.
But how come some of the most amazing people and the most would seem to be enlightened people are not particularly good looking people, and some of the best looking people are some of the people that you think are the least?
Correct. It doesn't. I didn't say they're spiritual qualifications necessarily. I said they're good karma. So it doesn't mean that.
So in karma, you're not getting good karma for doing good deeds, which would be.
Now they would have done good deeds in order to get that karma in this lifetime, but maybe they're all caught up in their own beauty. Many of my clients are top fashion models, so I know what it's like. Know what you're talking about. So, yeah, they can become,
But if on the soul journey, the evolution of the soul and going back to God and becoming enlightened. If they're doing good deeds and they're getting good karma and they're getting making a better life for themselves and bringing better things into their life, and if you say that good luck is one of those.
No, I don't say that. That's what the Vedas say.
Yeah, okay. What the Vedas say. I don't get how, if you're progressing and you get this thing like as a, you know, a bonus, and then you fall down again, but surely.
Well, maybe in that case it's a test.
But they probably have wealth, strength, fame, knowledge.
No, not everybody has those.
Except they just don't have beauty.
It's not everybody has those. I mean, you can find very advanced souls who are not particularly good looking.
Exactly, mostly.
Well, what I'm saying here is that those people get worshipped, recognized, praised.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, beauty is one of the opulences of the Godhead. It is a reflection of divine energy. I'm not saying that these people are realized souls. I'm saying they possess something that is a reflection of divine energy that others will worship or praise. Yeah, I mean, karma is a very complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows why they have this, that, and the other? Just as I said in the beginning, there are some wealthy people who are very realized souls,
mm-hmm.
or good souls, kind, benevolent. There are others who are quite the opposite. So it is not this quality that makes them closer to God. It is that this quality is a reflection of the divine. Knowledge. Yeah. People are impressed with or worship or follow or take advice from those who have knowledge. Especially material knowledge. But spiritual knowledge is of greater value because it can get you out of the material world. So God is a very knowledgeable soul. Let's say that. And detachment, which is one that most people don't get to think about. Detachment, vairagya, or renunciation. You can have whatever you have in life. You can have nothing, or you can have everything. You can be very wealthy. But you cannot be attached. Which means that if you lose it all tomorrow, it doesn't matter. But you can't just say, yeah, if I lost it all tomorrow, wouldn't bother me. Well, shall we test that theory out? You know, it may well bother you. So you have to be genuinely detached, unaffected. And so no matter what your station is in life, you can practice detachment. And I agree with you. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And I've known many people who are very, very beautiful souls who aren't necessarily attractive facially. And it doesn't matter. It's a non-issue. But that part of their karma is, you know, it is what it is. Right. Now, can you imagine right now, Alyanya, if Vishnu walked right through this door into this room, and he's got all of this to the maximum degree, we'd all be going, the sixth quality, which is the most important factor, is with Vishnu, there's no ego involved. He doesn't say, see what I have? Hey, did you see when I did Mars? Have you seen Mars?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of it? He doesn't act like that. He doesn't behave like that. He doesn't think it's a big deal. He's humble. He's kind. He's gentle. He's compassionate. He's a gentleman. And he's loving. Yet he has all of this. That's the point. So you're right. There's nothing wrong, I've said this many times, there's nothing wrong with driving a Mercedes. Okay? Mercedes is a very good car. It's a well-made car. But if you're driving a Mercedes, so everybody will look at you because you're driving Mercedes. See, I'm driving a Mercedes. That's attachment. Now you've invested your ego in it. And you're, you know, I'm driving a car that everybody wishes they could drive. That's ego. That's attachment. And that's very unattractive to the rest of us, looking at such a person. You don't judge somebody just because they're driving a Mercedes. It's whether or not they have an attitude about this. We were talking the other day about a person who was raised in, you know, a middle class or a lower middle class family, got married, and the husband became very, very successful, and they live in Fox Rock. Well, this woman mistreats her au pair, yeah, because she thinks she's now very important because she lives in Fox Rock and her husband makes X amount of money, so she mistreats her foreign au pair, who's actually more evolved than the woman is. This is what we came to conclude. So people become bewildered sometimes by intoxicated, bewildered. They sink more deeply into Maya. Anytime you start thinking that you're something, you start believing your own press. Or we've said numerous times, if you're on a spiritual path, which we all are here to some extent, or we wouldn't be here, frankly. The moment you think, because you're going to see that you've made some progress, and you should. But the moment you think, oh, see me now? Look, I'm getting to be quite advanced spiritually. Boom. That's it now. If you were a moment ago, you're not now. As soon as you think that, the ego has entered into the mix. You're done. And that's really what we're talking about. The ego coming in. So anything of value and of beauty and of genuineness that any of these qualities might give is immediately dashed with attachment and with the expression of ego. Look at me, aren't I something? Ego. Yeah, what did we read the other day? Guru Prana about. You're born, you worship your parents, then you worship your siblings, then maybe you worship your friends, then you worship your spouse, maybe your boss, maybe political figures, then you worship your children, then you worship your grandchildren. Well, when does God come in? Where does God fit in? The only one whose worship is going to have any benefit for you is God. Because all the rest will end. All of it comes to an end. One time, I went to Australia. And I brought my son, I've been there many, many times, and I brought my son over. Who was, I don't know, 18, 19. And he met a lot of my friends. I have very good friends there. They're like a second family to me. And he hung out with them and they met him. So he was away one evening and I was visiting my friends. They said, gee, he must be really, really proud of your son. I mean, he's really, really an amazing guy. He's just really a great guy. He must be so proud of him. I said, No. Why would I be? They looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. What do you mean you're not proud? This is what you're saying to me, that I should be proud of him because he comes from me. So this is a reflection back on me. Well, yeah, of course it is. He's your son. I said, okay, fine. Then that means when he screws up and acts the maggot, as you say, then that's also a reflection back on me. And I have to take that on. If I'm going to take on the pride, I have to take on the other crap. I said, I'm not taking on any of it. Thanks very much. I think he's a good guy. I think he has certain good qualities. I'm happy for him that he has those qualities. Don't get me involved in this. All I did was I gave birth to him. Well, yes, I did. Yes, I participated. So I said, no, I'm not going to identify with that. Yeah, you like him? Great, tell him. I mean, those are nice things to say. I wasn't an ass about it. But no, I don't take pride in it. It has nothing to do with me. Now, have you ever heard anybody in your life talk like I'm just talking now about their children? No, you haven't.
But it does make sense, though.
Of course it does. Yeah, it's better if you don't take things on.
Kind of indifferent.
Yeah. And, you know, if somebody thinks, I've offended them, I always will give them the benefit of the doubt. Even when I haven't offended them, I'll say, oh my God, I'm sorry to... if I offended you, sorry, I didn't mean to. I won't fight over, I'm right and you're wrong, and there's no point in all that. It's better just to let it go and to move on. Don't identify with it. It's not saying you can't love. I love my son. I just don't own him. You can love all your loved ones. You know, sometimes they love you and sometimes they don't. But you have to be able to cut things loose. You know, you don't own the child. But you've been given the child to look after for a while. Let's just chant this a couple more times. Time is sort of flying here. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 All right.
Can we just squeeze in a short meditation?
Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body totally, completely. Relax, breathe, let go, deeply relax. High above, beautiful beam of radiant light comes down down, all the way down from the heavens, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens, grounded in the earth below. Relax. You're in a beautiful meadow high on top of a mountain. And in this mountain meadow, there's a clear river running through. Wild mountain meadow flowers of every description everywhere. A gentle breeze bringing the fragrance of the flowers. It's warm. It's beautiful. And then coming down from above, it's a figure gently descending from the sky, from the heavens. And he comes down and he alights upon the earth in front of you. And it's Vishnu, God himself. And you see him. He's wearing his yellow cloth on the lower half of his body, silk. Upper half of his body is just got this piece of cloth around his neck only. He has four hands, and in each one you'll see the lotus, the conch, the disc or chakra, and the club. And he smiles and greets you. And you greet him. And what does he say to you? Listen to him. What does he say? If you can't hear him, then get a sense of what he's saying, of what's being communicated. Brought you a gift, and he hands that to you now. What is that gift? What are you to do with that gift? Will you do it? Thank him. Pay your respects to him. Bid him farewell. And watch him ascend into the heavens once again. Up, up, and gradually fades away. And you'll remain in your mountain meadow. If you haven't completed the steps of meditation, please complete them. And when you are ready, return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace.